and welcome to the 13th Hour Podcast. This is episode number 128, and I'm your host, Joshua Blum. And today, we're going to do a little bit of a reading from a book that I've been meaning to read from for a while. It's called The Unicorn Treasury. It's stories, poems, and unicorn lore, compiled and edited by Bruce Coville, who has written a number of young adult fiction books, illustrated by Tim Hildebrandt. So it's got these wonderful black and white and color illustrations that accompany a number of the stories. So it's just a collection of short stories, some fantasy, fairy tale, science fiction type of stories in this little anthology. So this is a story called The Court of the Summer King. I've never read it before, but it's got a couple of pictures in it, and that's why I picked it. And it's by Jennifer Robertson. The wind was a wolf. It came slinking, trotting, running, leaping out of the night, finally to tear at the throat of the encampment, as a real wolf tears at the throat of a deer. Winter was always the worst of Mother's seasons, Asta knew. No matter how hard the clan worked to store enough provisions for the long, cold winter months, when Mother of the Earth and the Sky and the World turned her face away to tend to her other children, the time was never easy. Asta had forgotten how many nights since babyhood she and Gar had huddled together beneath the bearskins to share one another's warmth, fearing there would come a time when Mother might forget to look back on them again, denying them summer forever. Summer, when the world was warm and the clan basked in the light of her love, the winter wolf howled and blew and plucked icy claws at the seams and lacings of the tent peg so firmly into the hardened ground. Asta had no fear the wolf wind would actually find a way in, because her father and mother had worked too hard to make the tent wind and water tight. But she disliked the solitude. She disliked the wailing of the wolf, echoing the sounds she had heard issuing too often this winter from human mouths. The keening, grieving wails that meant another of the mother's sons or daughters had been taken by the fever. And Elke. No, she put away the thought at once. To think of Elke was to voice the fear, to give in to it, to unlace the door flap, and to invite the winter wolf inside. And yet it was so hard not to think of Elke, little Elke, the newborn sister only 4 weeks old. Winterborn, Elke was hardly strong enough to fight off the fever that ravaged the clan. Even now, she was in the care of the healer, whose skills were already so much in demand by others of the clan. This is an appropriate story for this year, when flu season is so intense. So she heard a voice calling her name above the wail of the winter wolf, and Asta hastened to unlace the flap of the tent. It was Gar, buried beneath fur and leather, who ducked inside in a flurry of sleet and quickly hunched down by the fire. Gar coughed, but she knew that cough. It was the sound all of them made, clearing the wolf from their throats. Asta watched as Gar shed heavy furs and leathers and scooped the hood back from his head, bearing a face so very much like her own. It should be, they were twins, as alike in dark hair, dark eyes, and ruddy skin as in temperament, which was to say both of them had known frequent lectures from their parents for being too bold, too glib, too rash, for being too reckless when care was necessary. Gar's face looked old to her, too old for 15. There were worry lines etched in his flesh. The healer will keep her the night. Asta sighed a little as relief temporarily rushed in to wash away the dread. At least Elke wasn't dead. They'll stay too, she meant her parents. They'll stay, but... Gar broke it off, lips pressed together. She knew what he wanted to say, and wouldn't. To speak even in passing reference of a death before it occurred ensured the winter wolf a meal. Oh, my mother... I wish there was something we could do, Asta cried, clenching her fists in rage. I feel so helpless like this, cocooned out of the wind, while the clan dwindles away to nothing, stolen by this fever. Gar's face was troubled. It may be there is something. What? Asta leaned forward on her knees. There is a name. Gar's face was sullen. Melting sleet dripped from the hair, framing his face, edges the hood that had not warded adequately against the winter wolf. Rahela. Asta said it silently inside her mind, knowing better than to speak the witch's name aloud, though no one really knew in what way the witch's power manifested itself or how much she had really claimed. They did know enough to be very careful when speaking or thinking about her. One could never be sure. "Rahela," Gar said, "come morning." But Asta saw beneath the firmness of his tone to the worry and the fear. The wind died at dawn. The wolf was silenced for the day, perhaps the week if they were lucky. The mother would chase him away for good. But it was unlikely, Asta thought, slogging through the snow. There was nothing of spring in the air. It was cold, bitter cold, and the sun gazed only fitfully through folds in the world's winter cloak. Asta's exhalations fogged the air. Ahead of her, breathing like bellows, Gar broke a trail. He kicked ruffles of snow into her path, but it was easier than breaking it by herself. Rahela's tent, like all of them, was a small domed mushroom shape, pegged down against snow and wind, but it sat apart from the others, huddled like a single sentinel in a tight-grown copse of trees. A thread of bluish smoke wove its way from the open vent to the naked branches of the trees, where it tangled briefly, then rose again to smudge the dull gray sky. Asta smelled the pungent tang of cedar mixed with oak. A dog came running, and then another. Big dogs, both, and ferocious in their barking. In answer, the woman ducked out of the tent. Like Gar and Asta, she was wrapped against the weather, shapeless, weighted, made faceless in the gray shadows of the day. She whistled the dogs away. The children stopped in short of the woman. Now her face was clear. Asta saw it not so much different from her own, ruddy, angular, plain down from winter's limited rations. The eyes were a familiar dark brown, as were the lashes and eyebrows, but there was a bit of silver in her hair to match the fine netting of lines etched into the skin around her eyes and mouth. "Your name's," Rahela said quietly. Asta slanted a sideways glance at Gar. They both knew telling a true name to a witch gave her a special power over that person, but this was for Elki, still too young to know her own. "Asta," she said softly and heard a tremor in her voice. Gar hesitated a moment longer, then a single syllable of his name spilled it out on a rush of breath. Rahela smiled a little, and some of the lines went out of her face as even as newer ones came in. "Now you may enter, Gar and Asta, but be very wary of the little ones." Rahela's tent was smaller than their own, but it needed to be larger, Asta thought, as she ducked inside behind Gar and sat down on a layer of pelts. Everywhere she looked, there were animals. Two dogs, panting by the fire, cats and nursing kittens, tangled in skeins of yarn. Even a ferret in a fox kit. It's no wonder Rahela burned cedar. The tent smelled of musk and fur, but also of herbs and roots and spices and other magical things. Rahela pulled the flap down as she entered, then moved to kneel down across them. Almost at once, one of the cats untangled herself from nursing kittens and sprawled across Rahela's lap as the witch put aside her blanket. One slim, tough hand began to stroke the tabby's fur, and Asta heard the muted purr. "Well?" Rahela asked. "Were you sent, or did you come?"
"We came," Gar said. "Is it permitted?"
"Permitted? Oh, yes." Rahela sighed a little. "Welcomed. Also, I too often am alone, is the price I pay." Dark eyes flicked suddenly to Asta. "What price are you willing to pay for the spell you want from me?" Asta drew in a breath. "For Elki," she said, and then nearly gasped aloud in alarm. Now the witch knew Elki's name as well. "Our sister." It was Gar's turn. "Just a month old and sick from the fever like so many others." For a moment, Rahela's hand stopped stroking the cat, and then it began again. "That is why you have come." "For the fever, yes," Asta nodded. "Have you a spell? Isn't there anything you can give us to ward Elki from the fever? A charm? Maybe a medicine tea?" Rahela stared into the fire. She continued to stroke the cat. "I have none of these things." Her voice was oddly flat. "But you're a witch." In his urgency, Gar leaned forward. One of the dolls growled until Rahela spoke a word. "Can't you give us something?" "For your needs, I have none of those things." Rahela's brow was furrowed as she fought a private pain. "I know this fever too well. I have seen it once before. It came as the winter wolf, lived with us for the season until the mother turned her
face to us again, and then it was gone as quickly as it had come. But it took many of us with it. Many of us died. My husband, my parents, my children, and I was left alone. Asta stared at Rahela. She had not known a witch could cry. Is there nothing? Whispered Gar. I would give anything. Would you give your life? Rahela's voice was steady. To save the life of your small sister, who might die anyway in the hardships of the mother's winter, you waste yet another life, maybe two? Her eyes included his twin. For Elke, you offer Gar and Asta? Gar's face was white. Then that's your price, our lives? It's not my price, Rahela declared. By the mother, not mine. But I won't lie to you and say there is no risk. Then you do know a way, Asta said intently. I have learned many things since turning to the magic, Rahela said quietly. One of these things is that every sickness has a cure, but the cure itself may be dangerous to find or may demand great sacrifice. Often it is impossible to find at all, or, she paused a moment, then finished very softly, or impossible to win. Gar frowned. What do you mean? Rahela's face was very serious. In that moment, she seemed both old and young, wiser than even the healer and the herdsman. Certainly wise enough to know that they had, what they faced in their quest to save their sister. Abruptly, this witch made up her mind. With quick, deft movements, she brought out a brass tripod and a silver bowl, wrapped carefully in soft deerskin, beaded with rune signs. Rahela set the tripod before her by the fire, then rested the silver bowl on the curving, upright prongs. From a hide-wrapped jug, she poured water into the bowl, up to the rune-worked rim, then put the jug away. Chanting beneath her breath, Rahela closed her eyes and made signs in the air with nimble fingers, tracing invisible patterns. Then beneath, then still chanting softly, she touched the one forefinger to the surface of the water and set the bowl afire. As one, Asta and Gar recoiled, but they did not flee. Transfixed, they sat very still on folded legs and stared at the silver bowl, where flame danced on water, even though such a thing was impossible. Rahela put her hand, palm down, over the bowl. Flame licked at flesh, but she did not give any indication it burned. Slowly, she lowered the hand until it covered the bowl from rim to rim, and the flame was snuffed out. The smoke showed briefly gold, then silver, then bronze, and was gone. Now, she said softly, you must, or you may see where you must go to win this thing, the court of the Summer King. Asta slowly crept up to the bowl, balanced on its gleaming tripod. Gar kneeled beside her, and they stared at the water that was no longer water, but a window into the world. Asta drew in a breath of wonder. Unicorns, she whispered. Rahela nodded, the most beautiful of all of Mother's children. Gar frowned. What do unicorns have to do with a cure for the fever? A unicorn's horn is the most powerful magical thing known in the Mother's world, Rahela said simply. Win one, and you will have the means to cure the entire clan, as well as Elke, probably forever. Gar stared at the witch. Well, if you knew that, why haven't you told the herdsman? Why haven't you told the healer? Why tell us? Because you asked, Rahela answered. Your need was greater. Her dark eyes, full of distances, were on Asta, and because not just anyone will find a unicorn. It takes a very special person, a young woman like your sister. Briefly, there was a glint of tears in her eyes. I might have tried myself, except it was too late for me. I had a husband, children. But Asta might be the one. What can I do? Asta asked, astonished. You can win the unicorn's trust, Rahela said. How else can you win the horn? Crossly, Gar shook his head. We don't even know how to find a unicorn, and even if we did, why worry about winning the unicorn? Even you said our need was greater. Why can't we just take it? It would not be difficult to take one, as you say, from a colt or a filly. Rahela kept her voice toneless. The horns of the young are fragile and easily broken, and even a fragment would be enough for your needs. She stopped, as if reluctant to speak, then continued very quietly. But to take even a little without consent would kill the unicorn. Oh, Asta said in dismay. Oh, no. Even Gar seemed taken aback, but his grim expression renewed itself. Ostet's for Elkie, remember? He fixed an unwavering stare on Rahela. How do we find a unicorn? She touched a finger to the surface of the water and banished the court of the Silver King. In silence, they watched as she took a small leather pouch from her chest and loosened the drawstrings. From it, she took two objects, an ivory needle, polished glossy white, and a long silver thread, tensile as wire. Rahela threaded the needle and knotted it. Before Asta could speak, she caught the girl's right hand and held it out, palm upright, looping the thread over her middle finger. The needle dangled limply, pointing at the ground. When it moves, the witch said, follow it. When it dances, you have found the proper place. But Gar began, go. Rahela looked at Asta. It is a true diviner. That I promise you, it will lead you to the court of the Summer King. Asta nodded. Carefully, she put the needle and thread back into the pouch and tucked it away within the folds of her woolen tunic, beneath the furs and the leathers. Thank you, she began softly. Tugging at Gar's fur and encouraged him outside, Asta ducked out of the tiny tent so full of magic and animals. They stood near the river some distance from the encampment. The morning was gone, spent in futile attempts to make the needle indicate the proper way. So far, it hadn't stirred a bit. How many more times? Gar asked, exasperated. I think the witch lied. I think this needle and thread is nonsense. I don't. Steadfastly, Asta held out her arm. The needle hung motionless. She said it was the true diviner. We just haven't found the right place yet. Elkie could die while we stand out here waiting for nothing, Gar muttered. Asta's hand clenched the silver thread. Don't say that, Gar. You know better. It's the truth. She might. We might all, witch or no witch. Gar bent, dug a stone out of the snow, and threw it with all his might toward the river. It fell into frigid, slushy water with a thunking splash. Troubled, Asta looked at the polished needle. In silence, she begged it to do something, anything, if only to prove her brother wrong. Somehow, she trusted Rahela. She trusted the diviner to do precisely what Rahela had said it would do. She had to believe it was the only thing left for her to do. It was better than feeling helpless. And then, as Asta began to look at her brother, the needle began to move. Gar! It trembled. It stirred, twitched. Finally, in a slow, steady revolution, the needle began to seek. Look, Asta breathed. You're doing that. No, I'm not. Gar, it's working. She came up close to her, or he came up close to her, but Asta didn't even bother to look at him. She stared at the needle in fascination, tongue between her teeth, begging it to show her proper way, the proper way. At last, it stopped moving. The polished tip pointed north. There, Asta said, and began to walk steadily. Gar followed after a moment. But you don't know where it's taking you. Well, to the court of the Summer King. Asta, grinning, didn't take her eyes off the pointed needle. Just as Rahela said. They walked, always north. Asta lost track of how far they had gone, though Gar occasionally muttered something about turning back before it was too late. But he didn't. He just followed along like a tame but suspicious dog, intent on learning the secret of the unicorn diviner. Wait, Gar, look. He looked, and the needle, suspended from its thread, spun and spun until the thread was wrapped tight as yarn on a spindle. Then it unwrapped, spinning in the opposite direction until the thread was smooth as silk again, and the needle was pointed at a massive old oak, half-shattered by a lightning blast, and it split the trunk nearly in two. A huge charred cleft marred the frost-rimmed trunk. Asta, she didn't listen. She merely followed the line of the needle to the charred cleft, and putting out a hand to touch it, she touched nothingness instead. Nothingness. And it swallowed her whole, leaving the emptiness in place. Asta tumbled out of Mother's harshest season into her gentlest. In place of snow, there was grass, lush, thick grass, green as the world's summer cloak. The warm, bright face of Mother's son touched all the world with gold. Asta, still clutching the silver thread, stared speechlessly at the world that was so much like her own and realized it was her own. It was her own and only the seasons that had been altered. Summer, she breathed aloud, And then, from behind, she heard Gar's garbled outcry as he tumbled out of the cleft. Asta! Asta! I know, she said sternly. Hush, Gar, we are in the court of the Summer King.
That's nonsense.
But Gar was silenced because before them stood the proof. A unicorn in the flesh. Not the Summer King himself, whom Asta had seen in the bowl, much younger, smaller, with his pride intact but less pronounced. Mostly he seemed curious. Long-lashed, amber-honey eyes peered quizzically from under a pale golden forelock that fell between the two erect cream-colored ears, tufted impishly at the tips and dusted with only the faintest sheen of brightest brilliant gold. The soft rosy gold muzzle quivered a moment, and whiskers shimmered, tipped with droplets of sun-gilded dew. Nostrils expanded widely, inhaled noisily, then snorted as if in surprise. The horn, Gar said intently. It was smaller than Asta had expected. Its fragile root was hidden within silky layers of shining forelock. And suddenly she realized the silver thread she held wasn't thread at all, but a strand of hair from the mane or tail of a unicorn. The horn matched the young unicorn's wide-spaced, astonished eyes, amber and honey and gold. It twisted from root to tip in a lazy, symmetrical spiral. If I grab his head, Gar began, you can grab the horn. No. Asta's tone was final. Slowly, carefully, but not as to frighten the unicorn, she put away the diviner. Then, hands outstretched, she took a step toward the colt. He eyed her curiously, showing no fear. Delicate amber hooves barely depressed the flowers and grass beneath the tree. He was not a horse, and certainly not a riding animal, but with enough similarities that Asta longed to stroke his velvet muzzle, to tame her hands in his shining mane, to feel the sleek, glossy back beneath her as she galloped across the meadows of the court of the summer king. The horn, Gar hissed distinctly. Asta felt warm, soft breath as the unicorn cradled his muzzle in her palms. She smelled the scent of flowers and the tang of spice in the air, a clean, fresh scent unlike any she had known. She felt the vibration of the colt's exhilaration against her fingers and saw the winding spiral of the glossy horn as it jutted from his brow, parting the shining forelock that swept down to brush her wrists with a subtle seductiveness. Eyes half shut, the unicorn rested his jaw upon her shoulder. It would be so easy, she knew. One twist, one snap of the fragile horn. Do it now, Gar whispered. But Asta knew she could not. For Elki, Gar urged. For Elki and the clan. Asta cupped her palms beneath the colt's neck and stroked the glossy, cream-pale hair as Rahela had stroked the cat. There was warmth in the flesh beneath the hair, in life, strength, and health. She tangled fingers in his mane and knew her soul was tangled as well, trapped within the web of unicorn magic. Whose trust was won, she wondered, the unicorn's or her own? Asta, Gar hissed, get the unicorn, let's go. For Elki. Asta bit her lower lip, just grab it and twist. Inwardly, she shuddered. No, she said it mostly to the colt, whose head was not much higher than her own. I can't. But you have to, Gar's voice was insistent. Not for me, not for you, for Elki, for the clan. It's what we came to do. I know. Asta shut her eyes and buried her face in the hair, silk of the unicorn's mane. But surely the mother wouldn't want me to kill one of her children merely to save another. And abruptly, even as Asta finished speaking, the unicorn shed its shape and became a woman instead. The mother's smile was the light of the world. Her eyes and nails were of gold, the yellow gold of the summer sun, and her gown was spun of spider silk and delicate, gilt-bright flowers. The hair flowing down her back was amber and honey and gold. Gar fell to his knees. Asta stood locked in silence. Rahela chose well, the mother said, and her voice was the song of summer rain, cool and soft and sweet. Gar trembled. But it was for Elki, our sister. She's only a baby, only a little one. We had to do something. He rubbed his gloved hands nervously on his fur-lined leathers. She's just a baby. I know, the mother said. I know all things. I know that even now the winter wolf howls on the hilltops, singing his song of death. But you're here, not there. And so there is something to be done before I send you back. Must you? Asa looked at the bright veil of summer glow, the court of the summer king. Even if I wanted to stay here? The mother shook her head and her radiance increased. All my children have their places. You are out of yours. If the world is to turn again, you must go back before the day is done. Asta drew in a breath. We came for the unicorn's horn. But you did not take it. No, Asta looked at the ground. I couldn't. The mother's laughter was the lilt of meadow lark's song, and then it stopped. You still may, she said. I will give you a choice because that is the way I have made the world. There are choices in everything. Her hands were on Asta's head, smoothing bark brown hair. Gold nails shed dancing sparks of bright brass sunlight. I consent to the sacrifice. Take the horn. Go back to your clan. Save Elki and the others. You will never know fever again. Or? Asta asked. Or go back with nothing and take the chance that Elki will survive. Gar scrambled to his feet. Asta, do it. Take the horn just to be sure. With your consent. Asta looked into the mother's blinding eyes. What is the price if I do? The hand fell away from her head and took the sunlight with it. Never to know summer again. Asta stared. Never? No, the mother shrugged. But winter need not be deadly. Your clan would learn to survive. Asta, Gar began. It is your choice, mother told Asta. You must decide. Outraged, Asta shook her head. I can't. How can you expect me to save Elki and the others, but only so that they must learn what it's like to live forever in winter? Mother, I think you are too cruel. Too cruel, too kind. Mothers must often be so when dealing with their children. Behind the woman, unicorns gambolled in the veil. The summer king with his golden horn was ablaze in brilliant sunlight. You must decide, Asta. Asta shut her eyes. Behind her lid, she could still see the unicorns, horns agleam in the sunlight, so alive in the summer warmth. She opened her eyes. Send us back, Asta said. Mother, send us back, even for Elki. I can't sentence the others to summerless lives. In the end, it would kill us all, in spirit, not in body, if not in body. The mother smiled. Her hair was a summer sunset, her eyes the dawn of coming day. Rahela chose well, indeed. So, Gar said curtly, we go home with nothing. Asta held her silence, knowing he was weary and worried and frightened of what they would find when they went back, just as she was herself. Resolutely, she turned to look at the mother, only to fall back a step. Gar, look! It was the young woman, or the young unicorn yet again, honey gold eyes agleam as he stepped daintily through the grass and flowers to set his head against Asta's shoulders. He rubbed, grunting, and Asta braced herself on spread legs before he could knock her down. Head bowed, the colt rubbed repeatedly, knocking the horn gently against the top of her shoulder until the root itself crumbled away in a shower of powdered gold. Asta caught the horn as it fell. It was warm and smooth to the touch, so silky with its perfectly symmetrical spiral. In shock, she stared at it with her hands, and she looked at the colt. He seemed almost to sigh, as if he'd be glad to be rid of the burden. He shook his head as the forelock parted just enough to expose the nub of a newborn horn, the horn of an adult. Its tip was purest gold. Gar's laugh was a short bark of sound. So, all of it was meaningless. All that nonsense about choices. The mother tricked you, Asta, don't you see? A unicorn is no different from a deer. It shed its horn, Asta, like a puppy shedding milk teeth. Meaningless? She shook her head. I don't think so. He gave it to us, Gar. He consented for us to have it, not the mother for him. We won the unicorn's trust, and so we won the horn, just as Rahela said. For the last time, Asta tangled her hair in its silken mane, still clutching the gleaming horn, and set her face against his neck. She breathed in the tangy spice of his scent, gloried in the texture of his coat, was touched by the magnitude of his trust, and then in silence she thanked him, turned away, back to the tree. Gar's frown indicated the depth of his worry for her and his bafflement. Asta blinked her tears away. Don't you see, Gar? There are choices in everything. Things that can be freely given, but can't be taken without a price, without sacrifice. Asta, come on, Gar, she said gently. Let's go home. Let's go home to Elki, and when summer comes, we can teach her how to swim. And with the horn clutched in her hands, Asta slipped back through the tree into the world she knew again, where the winter wolf howled on the hilltops, impatient for summer to come. The end.
I was looking for some information about this story elsewhere. I wasn't able to find much about it, but here's some information about the author, Jennifer Robertson. Jennifer Mitchell Robertson O'Green is an author of fantasy and historical literature, and she lived in Arizona since 1957. She grew up in Phoenix, but in 1999 relocated to Flagstaff. She obtained a Bachelor of Science in Journalism from Northern Arizona University, and she spent her final semester in England at the Study of London. This enabled her to do in-depth research at castles and cathedrals, museums and estates, and visit historical sites in Scotland and Wales. And she, this is from Goodreads. And she's written a number of different books and a number of different series. Let's see. Sword Dancer, Sword Singer, Out of Avalon, Shape Changers, as well as this short story. And here's some information about Tim Hildebrandt. He's an award-winning artist and illustrator whose work has appeared in countless best-selling books, posters, and calendars. After attending Meinzinger's Art School in Detroit, Michigan, Mr. Hildebrandt worked as an animator for 10 years before turning to illustration. And the artist lives in Gladstone, New Jersey, where he currently divides his time between several book projects and film projects. I don't believe he's still alive, but his work certainly lives on. And he and I think his brother were pretty famous for a lot of fantasy illustration. So I'll put links to that in the show notes. You'll certainly have seen pictures that he's done. Does a lot of Tolkien-inspired stuff and other kinds of fantasy art. I'm sure you've definitely seen aspects of it. So I will put that as well as pictures of some of the ones that accompany this particular short story in the show notes. If you like this particular story as well as other ones, check out more on the 13th Hour podcast, which you can find on iTunes and as well as the main page, which has the show notes, as well as you can places where you can stream all of these things off the internet directly. And that's 13thhr.wordpress.com, 13thhour.wordpress.com, as well as you can find more information on social media, Facebook and Instagram, and Twitter and Tumblr, and you'll see that in the show notes itself. Thanks as always for listening. Take care, and I'll talk to you guys next week. Bye. Thank you.